Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the Disabled American Veterans Service Organization, and we'll learn about the Civil War weekend at historic Fort Snelling. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Tuesday, August 28th, is Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. Every branch of service and nearly 60 organizations that support military families will be on display. Resource information will be available for military youth, the service member looking for employment, and community members who want to get involved in supporting their local families. I encourage you to come out in the morning. Just after 10, the official flag will be raised as the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division Band plays, as a large group of recently returned service members begin a short parade across the fairgrounds. Join these service members and their families as they witness country artist Rocky Lynn perform his Tribute to the Troops concert in Carousel Park, sponsored by Thomson Reuters. All active military and their families, as well as veterans and their spouses, will receive a discounted admission at the gate when they present a valid documentation of military service. For more information on a day filled with activities, especially for military families, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. We'll see you August 28th for Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair, sponsored by U.S. Bank.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Treaties are signed, and the battles of nations end. But the personal battles of those disabled in war only begin when the guns fall silent. These men and women must struggle to regain health, reshape lives transformed by disability, learn new trades or professions, and rejoin the civilian world. At each step, they need help and to help themselves. At each step, the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota is there to help them. Joining us now is the State Adjutant Executive Director of DAV in Minnesota, Stephen Whitehead. Stephen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
No, you've been out, you were on the show before, but I think the last time you were here, you were an outreach coordinator for Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. What happened?
That's correct. Well, this opportunity came to broaden my experience on helping veterans, and I couldn't pass it up. I knew that the Yellow Ribbon program was going to continue on going to the full-time staff. This opportunity came with Disabled American Veterans, and I'm glad to be here.
And you're still a member of the Minnesota National Guard?
Still a member of the Minnesota National Guard, just about 21 years in now, all with the Minnesota National Guard.
And an E-8, you're sticking around to be a sergeant major?
I don't know about that. I definitely enjoy the E-8, though.
Okay. Well, now you've joined, you are, as I said, the state adjutant for the DAV of Minnesota. What is the DAV of Minnesota, and what's its mission?
Well, the DAV of Minnesota, DAV is a congressional chartered nonprofit organization that was founded in 1920, but was actually congressionally signed, chartered in 1932. We actually go out and actually represent all of disabled American veterans and helping them with any claims that they may have, as well as making sure they get treated fairly in society.
So you're now the State Adjutant for the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota.
Just Minnesota, correct. We have 32 different chapters across the state with approximately 18,000 members in Minnesota. In total, there's 1.2 million Disabled American Veteran members nationwide. I actually work side-by-side with the state commander, Commander Bob Erickson, and working directly with the chapters and helping any issues that they have, or as well as helping them get out and actually find the veterans that need help.
We're speaking with Stephen Whitehead, the state adjutant of the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Stephen, what's your definition of disabled, and who's eligible to join the DAV of Minnesota?
Well, Tom, that's a good question. I'll actually give you the book answer on that just so it's clear. Disabled American Veteran membership is open to any man or woman who served in the armed forces during a period of war or under conditions simulating war and was wounded, disabled to any degree, or left with long-term illness as a result of military service and was discharged or retired from the military service.
Okay, now, Stephen, we announced, I think, last week on the show that the Commander's Task Force, which is made up of 9 veteran service organizations around Minnesota, are going to participate in the show every month, and that's why you're here today. But a lot of the veterans out there belong to the American Legion or the VFW. Why would they want to join the DAV of Minnesota?
Well, the DAV, it has a lot of things that we could do. Just like the American Legion, the VFWs, we also have service officers that will help them with their claims. We actually have, just the Disabled American Veterans side alone, we've served about $60 million in claims to our veterans. We really take pride in helping our veterans through their issues. We have service officers that will actually go out to their communities. When they have special events, bring a van out and actually have a national service officer actually sit down and actually help them with the paperwork and make sure that we see it all the way through.
So do you work with the county veteran service officers, or how do you interact with the other services available?
We actually work with county veteran service officers. We also have our own national service officers, or we call service officers. They're all accredited just like the county veteran service office. And when we get an actual veteran that comes up and wondering about if he's eligible for a claim or something like that, just like the county veteran service officers, we'll sit down, fill the paperwork out, and take them through the steps to find out if they're eligible or not.
Okay, and where is the DAV located?
DAV is actually located right beside the Capitol, right in front of the Capitol, out on 12th Street, St. Paul.
And for those veterans that might need some help, if they were injured, served in the service, whatever, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get in touch?
The quickest way is actually go to our website, which is www.davmn.org. It has all the links. Actually, you can get a contact number to an actual service officer or even to a local chapter.
So it's davmn.org.
Correct.
Okay, and if we've got some, do you deal with all veterans from all ages, all wars?
All veterans range from, you know, coming back from OIF, OEF, all the way up to World War II. Like we said, Disabled American Veterans, as I've been around since 1920. And so we've actually helped every war that we've been out there and a veteran come back, DAV's been there to help them.
I'm sure that there's some returning service people that came back from Iraq and Afghanistan and they were injured and they need some help now. But I've heard that some of my buddies from Vietnam, now that they're retiring, they've got some time to think about stuff, and some of them are coming forward for the first time and maybe need some help.
Absolutely. Just yesterday, we're over at the stand down that was actually at the Boy Scout right there by Fort Snelling, and there were still Vietnam veterans still signing up for their claims for the first time.
And that was put on by MACV, and that was out at Fort Snelling.
Correct.
And do you know how many people showed up at that?
I didn't get an actual number on that. I was looking for that this morning. And I actually didn't see a number. It was going on yesterday as well as today. MACV had it going on for 2 days.
So you were out there helping to process some of those guys?
Correct. We actually had a booth out there where one of our service officers were out there to speak on behalf of DAV and help them with their claims.
We're going to come back to DAV in Minnesota after the break, but what type of services were offered at the stand-down?
They had clothing. Veterans were allowed to get clothing, bedding, teeth clean, haircuts, you name it. There was all kinds of things that were offered free of service to these veterans.
What a great event, and I know they're going to hold several of those around the state for the rest of the summer. We've got to take a short break, then we'll be back with Stephen Whitehead, the state adjutant from Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I've been joined by Stephen Whitehead, state adjutant of Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. Stephen, once again, DAV of Minnesota, who's eligible to join?
Any member that's actually served in the armed forces during a period of war or under any conditions simulating war can actually join, actually, as long as they're wounded, disabled to any degree, or left with long-term illnesses as a result of the military services, and discharged or retired from the military.
Okay, now let's get into the meat of it. What type of programs do you offer? What do you do?
Well, the biggest things that people forget about is we are actually there to help the veterans. And one of the things that we really thrive on is transportation. We really make sure to help our veterans get to and from their doctor's appointments. We have vans located at the VA Medical Center here in Minneapolis, as well as St. Cloud, that will travel, pick up the veteran at their home, bring them to the appointment, and then bring them back. With this program, we're actually receiving two brand new vans this year for the medical center here in Minneapolis, just because of how well Minnesota does with the volunteer services. These drivers of these vans are all volunteers. They're not paid by the VA. They're not paid by DAV. It's just volunteer members coming up, say, I'll drive today. We have so many hours that the national program donated a van with the help of Ford and given us a van to give here in Minneapolis, as well as we're receiving another one just because of the amount of hours that we put in. We ranked within the top five states in the nation.
For volunteer hours
and miles.
And I've seen every time I've been out to the VA hospital, there's always vans there. Seems like they're from all over the state.
Correct. That's just the vans here at Minneapolis here, but we also have county veteran service officers that have vans that have our logo on it that will bring veterans up from all across the state, from anywhere from down in southeast, southwest corner, all the way up to International Falls. They come down to and transport these veterans.
So if a veteran or a member of the DAV of Minnesota has a medical appointment at the VA, they just call you or
correct.
Is there a number
they have, to
call?
If they have an issue where they can't find their own transportation and they need a ride, they can go to that website like I listed before, www.davmn.org, and there's a toll-free number right on there to actually open them in contact with the actual service officer that's closest to them and arrange transportation for them.
So for our veterans that are disabled or maybe getting a little older and they can't drive?
Correct, or afraid to drive in these bigger cities because we forget a lot of these people are used to driving in rural areas and they're not comfortable driving up the cities. So we actually bring them up here for them.
What a great service. What other programs do you offer?
Well, another program is we're donor connections. We have a lot of volunteers out there, a lot of people that actually want to donate goods to us. We have our clothing drive where we actually all across the Minneapolis area here, the Twin Cities across to the small towns, we have our DAV clothing boxes located out there where people can donate clothing. And then we'll actually give those clothes to thrift stores, and in return we get a certain amount of money that we'll actually then in return give it back to the disabled veterans by hosting events such as deer hunts up at Camp Ripley. We do fishing on the lake for veterans, and all the money that we raise will go back to the disabled American veterans with getting on. We also sponsor certain events where, like, we have disabled American veteran that wants to go skiing or learn how to ski. We'll sponsor a veteran to go be part of that by using that money.
Stephen, did you say the part of the donor program was equipment too?
Equipment also. People will donate crutches, wheelchairs, scooters, lifts. And just last year alone, but with that program, we raised over $350,000 worth of equipment that we gave out to our disabled American veterans by just people donating it to us. With that program, people, again, will go to our website or get a toll-free number and actually call and say, hey, I have this piece of equipment I want to donate, and we'll actually go pick it up if they can't bring it to us, and we'll get it to somebody that's in need.
Now, the DAV of Minnesota is a veteran service organization.
Correct.
How are you funded? Do you just raise money through various events?
We raise our money through various events, donations, bequests, where people will pass away and leave a donation to us through in their will. But a lot of our money comes from the thrift plan and the donor connection, where we also have people that donate vehicles. Vehicles can be donated and then resold on an actual market, and we actually get a profit off that as well.
And once again, for information on that, they go to davmn.org?
Correct.
And I see here that all of this, the thrift clothing donations and all of these fundraising things, your mission, it says, is to build better lives for our country's disabled veterans and their families.
Correct. We just don't focus on just that disabled veteran, because the families too will suffer, and we help that family out just as much as we do that veteran, transporting the family with them, helping with their costs and stuff like that.
We're speaking with Stephen Whitehead, State Adjutant of DAV Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. And Stephen, there's lots of programs already, but I know you've got some events and things that you touched on, a hunting event. What kind of events do you do during the year?
Well, throughout the year. The big one coming up now we're actually working on is the Disabled American Veteran Hunt up at Camp Ripley. We had over 700 applications to get turned in to actually be part of it. We'll actually, I can't remember the percentage that we're taking out actually hunting on Camp Ripley, but it's free charge. We actually pay the whole week's time up there, put them in room and board, and sponsor that event. We also do a fishing outing where we actually have 70 different professional fishermen come in and donate their time and take a disabled veteran as well as an actual soldier from Minnesota out on the lake and spend an all day fishing with them.
Now, has that happened this summer yet?
That's still happening this year. That's coming up actually, and I want to say it's actually September here.
And once again, more information at davmn.org. You know, I'm constantly amazed just about every guest that come on the show has something to say about Camp Ripley. What a facility.
It's a great facility. And Camp Ripley has been a great support for Disabled American Veterans. When we host events like this, they've been so supportive for hosting it, paying, getting meals for us. Just the establishments alone, the changes they're making to that base at housing alone, being able to put 7 to 10 veterans in one house so we can actually, and it's handicap accessible for each and every one of them.
Stephen, I don't know how you found this position, but you're in the Minnesota National Guard. You've been deployed. You worked for the Yellow Ribbon Program. I mean, your background is full of military, and you've experienced some of these things, and now you get to help all of these veterans. It must be a dream job.
It's a dream job. Obviously, when I was working with the Yellow Ribbon Program and how we helped veterans and their families, I just really got a big passion for helping veterans, and finding this job with DAV has just been a dream come true for me, so I can continue helping these veterans all across the state.
Stephen, one of the things we haven't talked about is as a group, you must have some impact on the state legislature and on Congress.
Well, we actually advocate for our veterans, and we find out from our veterans what the needs are, and so we all actually advocate to the state legislation of what the needs are so they can go fight for us on the Hill.
And you must be pulling together in addition to lobbying for some of those things or trying to help the disabled veterans. You kind of provide an outlet for fellow disabled veterans to help today's soldiers and servicemen and troops from all ages.
Absolutely. Just like the commissioner said in the beginning of this segment, is we're handing the torch off to the younger generation of veterans. And it's the veterans of the Vietnam, the World War II era, that's really established this program to be where we're at because of their continuous wanting to help veterans so we don't go through what they went through during their time of war and the sufferings that they have by letting us know what we need and passing the torch on to the younger veterans. We'll continue moving forward.
Stephen, you're doing a great job. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
For more information, go to davmn.org. That was Stephen Whitehead, state adjutant for the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. With an unemployment rate twice the average, Minnesota's veterans are facing an unemployment crisis. The good news is that you can help. Each week, we'll feature one veteran story and ask you to help hire Minnesota's heroes. This week's veteran is Army Corporal Eric Melia. Corporal Melia, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what type of position you're looking for?
Like you said, my name is Corporal Eric Melia. I have a 2-year degree from Alexandria Technical College in law enforcement. I also have my post eligible for the Minnesota Post Board to pursue my career in law enforcement.
Eric, we hope that you get a lot of job offers and that you get hired somewhere very soon.
Well, I hope so too.
Eric and hundreds of others are ready to work hard on their next mission. Can we hire Minnesota's heroes? To connect with Eric, contact the Alexandria Workforce Center at 320-762-7800. That's 320-762-7800. Or to learn more, visit positivelyminnesota.com/veterans. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll learn about the Civil War weekend at historic Fort Snelling. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about historic Fort Snelling during the Civil War. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
Today I'd like to talk about a call to action for all veterans. As the war of the past 11 years have faded away from the media spotlight, we must be ever more vigilant in ensuring that we do not, as a nation, repeat our errors of the past. As veterans who are the beneficiaries of the rights and benefits gained by our predecessors, we must increase our efforts to guarantee those benefits are not lost as our nation comes to grip with the current fiscal challenges. The call of action has three parts. Part one, be an active learner of your rights and benefits. Many of our veterans do not know their benefits. The best place to start is with your county veteran service officer. Part two, utilize the benefits you've earned. Part three, hand the torch to the following generation. As veterans, you've earned the right to stand tall for your service. As the saying goes, every veteran wrote a blank check made payable to our nation for the amount up to and including their own life. To our newest veterans, the benefits you will be eligible to receive are the result of your predecessors' hard work and diligence. The torch will be in your hands, and it will be up to your generation to ensure our nation stays committed to caring for our veterans of all ages. The above call of action is essential should we seek to sustain our nation's ability to have an armed forces ready to serve and protect our country. As George Washington is credited for saying, the willingness for which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, will be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars and how they were treated and appreciated by their nation.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Stephen Osman is a retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society. Previously, he developed interpretive programs at historic Fort Snelling, furnished the fort's buildings, and managed Fort Snelling for over three decades. Mr. Osman served in the United States Army Reserve in psychological operations, headquartered in one of the old barracks along Fort Snelling's Taylor Avenue. Stephen, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back.
It would seem that you spent a good part of your adult life at historic Fort Snelling.
It does seem that way. I actually lived inside the walls of the old fort for a number of years as well. I was the last person to actually live on the post.
And Stephen, today we're talking about Fort Snelling during the Civil War. What was it like back then?
Well, the fort had a variety of roles during the Civil War years. It was a mustering center. They tried to get troops south as fast as they could. It was a staging base to rotate companies to the various Minnesota frontier forts, Fort Ridgely, Fort Ripley, Fort Abercrombie. It was later an internment camp for Dakota and for Winnebago removals from the state of Minnesota. It served as a marshaling yard for troops, animals, and equipment for Western expeditions. In 1864, it became a draft rendezvous. A small number of Minnesotans were actually drafted for the Civil War. Finally, it was a mustering outpost, brought back all of Minnesota's 25,000 soldiers who survived the war and processed them into civilian life.
Stephen, I'm curious, I think you've told me this before, but when was Fort Snelling started?
It was started in the 1820s to promote and to protect the American fur trade long before settlement was actually allowed up here in what would become Minnesota. Over the year, the fort's mission changed, and finally by 1858, with the Twin Cities growing up, there was not much need for a military post in the middle of a metro area, so the fort was actually sold to a private citizen. Now, he made a one-third down payment of his $90,000 purchase price. And you think, well, that's maybe a lot of money just for the old fort. But you've got to remember, the military reservation was most of what became Minneapolis and part of St. Paul. So there's a lot of land here. This guy planned to build the city of Fort Snelling. Things didn't work out. He didn't make any more payments after that one-third down. But when the Civil War started, it was quite the opportunity for him. Minnesota needed a place to put its soldiers safe from the liquor and the women in St. Paul, and so they moved them back into old Fort Snelling that had been used as a sheep farm for 3 years. This guy started charging rent to the government. The government didn't pay the rent, and finally in 1871 they worked out a deal. He got most of Minneapolis for his initial down payment. The government kept about 1,700 acres, which became the fort so familiar to World War I and World War II soldiers.
We're speaking with Stephen Osman, a retired senior historian from the Minnesota Historical Society on Minnesota Military Radio. Stephen, what was a typical day like for a Civil War recruit at Fort Snelling?
Well, there's really two different perspectives on this. If you looked at what the newspapers said, I'll read you a quote. The fort and vicinity yesterday presented a truly warlike appearance. Troops were drilling in companies, platoons, and squads. Men engaged in fitting up quarters. Officers hurrying to and fro, blah, blah, blah. But the duty day for the soldier was regulated by the fife and drum, and things were really pretty boring for them. One soldier wrote, "The proceedings and general features of yesterday were much like the same as the day preceding. The morning gun was fired at 5:30, drill for an hour, breakfast, recreation for half an hour, drill for 5 hours, dinner, recreation, drill again until 5 o'clock. Such was the day's routine. Like any military job, it tended to be pretty boring at Fort Snelling."
Is there information on what all that drilling consisted of back then?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of the drilling was first with broomsticks and pieces of board because they didn't have enough guns. And then they started sending in the refuse of European armies, out-of-date old muskets. They figured, in Minnesota, we'll send them all up here. They can use them to drill, and we'll give them good muskets when they head south. What happened was when the Dakota conflict started in the summer of 1862, 150 years ago this month, they only had these old crummy guns here. When they sent them out with the troops, they found out the ammunition they sent with was the wrong size to fit down the barrel of the gun. So there were a lot of problems as the Dakota conflict started.
Stephen, you'd think back in those days that most of the recruits would be pretty fair shots before they even joined up.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Recruiting standards tended to be rather low and rather non-selective. There's reports of women getting in uniform. That was not supposed to happen. Many teenagers got in. They were not supposed to. And I've got one good story here of a 14-year-old. He wrote, "I was tall for my age and weighed 175 pounds. My appearance was youthful. When the recruiting officer mustered us in, he came to me, put his hand on my shoulder, and tried to push me, but he didn't succeed. 'Young man,' said he, 'how old are you?' 18, I replied. 'I think you are a liar,' he said, 'but you're a good chunk of a boy, and I'll pass you anyway.'" So that's how a lot of guys got into the Union Army.
Looked like he was big enough and strong enough and stayed in.
That would work.
Stephen, what was the makeup of the recruits? I assume we had immigrants here. Were there any minorities?
Many immigrants. African Americans were not allowed in the Army until 1863, and after that they made up a very large percentage of the Army. But actually, Minnesota had a rather unique role in the recruitment of African Americans. There was quite a labor shortage up here, as you would imagine, during the war. And so General Sibley, planning to chase the Dakota out onto the plains in the summer of 1863, needed teamsters to drive his wagons. He wrote down to St. Louis. They recruited teamsters, sent them up. They turned out to be African Americans. They brought their families with them. They settled in St. Paul. And after these guys went out on the plains driving the wagons, they came back and they joined the Army. They had lost their job as teamsters, but they had to join an Iowa regiment, the 1st Regiment of Iowa Infantry of African descent, and went off and fought in Arkansas the rest of the Civil War.
So there was quite a diversity of recruits coming through Fort Snelling.
There was a diversity, more than you would expect, including, believe it or not, some Confederates came through here.
After the Civil War, I saw.
No, this is during the Civil War. Civil War prisoner of war camps were pretty miserable. And one opportunity for a guy to get out of a northern POW camp would be to join the Army. They called them galvanized Yankees. They promised that if they put on a blue uniform, they would not have to fight their former comrades. They would be sent out to garrison forts on the frontier. So they brought a bunch of the guys through Fort Snelling, sent them out into the Dakotas. And while they were here, they caused quite a bit of trouble. This was not really the best element in the Confederate Army that decided to join the Union Army. It was some pretty low characters. A lot of them ended up in the Fort Snelling guardhouse.
Stephen, are there any relics out there? What remains from Civil War days at Fort Snelling?
There is not a lot left from the Civil War days. There are four buildings that are still there from the war. The Round Tower, it was an ordnance storehouse. The South Battery, also a storehouse, the commanding officers' quarters, and the officers' quarters themselves are still standing and look pretty much the way they did during the Civil War years.
Stephen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to learn a little bit more about historic Fort Snelling and the Civil War weekend, which is coming up. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We're speaking with Stephen Osmond, a retired historian from the Minnesota Historical Society. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been visiting with Stephen Orse Osman, retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society, about historic Fort Snelling during the Civil War. And Stephen, you were telling me a story during the break about Fort Snelling and all the different types of people that were there. You want to expand on that a little bit?
There were many different types of people that went through Fort Snelling. Most were enlistees who really did want to join the Union Army to preserve the Union, or in some cases to fight against slavery. Later on in the war, a few draftees passed through Fort Snelling. Most of them did not want to be there. African Americans came through, first as Teamsters, then as new recruits into the Union Army. Some Confederates came through, passing out to the Dakotas to garrison the forts. And finally, at the end of the war, all of the guys came back through Fort Snelling.
Now, what caused the Minnesotans to, did they sign up? Were they drafted? Did they just enlist?
Almost all of them voluntarily enlisted, and everything really changed with the firing on Fort Sumter. Most Minnesotans had wanted us to stay out of the war, to not be involved in this fight with the slave owners. But once the Confederates fired on Fort Sumter, everything changed. And one member of the 1st Minnesota wrote, the firing on Fort Sumter was an affront to national dignity as well as a declaration of what the seceding states had determined to do. All over the northern states, wherever the news was told, it was almost like a personal challenge to fight, emphasized by a slap in the face. It called for immediate and aggressive action and brought a sudden and momentous crisis into hundreds of thousands of lives, and turned their thoughts from personal affairs to national honor and safety. After the attack on Fort Sumter, the only consistent attitude of a loyal man was with a rifle at his shoulder, and the only logical argument, a bullet. Pretty strong words from a member of the 1st Minnesota that went on to suffer the highest casualties of any Union unit in any battle at the Battle of Gettysburg in the summer of 1863.
So, Stephen, what would cause our Minnesota residents to enlist in those days, and how was the communications? Did the newspapers?
The newspapers really boosted the war. There certainly wasn't any money in enlisting. It was $13 a month, and pretty poor food and pretty poor quarters and living conditions and so forth. They went because of patriotism. They really felt it was their mission to go off, but not so much for slavery. That changed once they got into the South and actually saw what slavery was and what it had done, not so much to the African Americans, but to the whites in the change in culture in the South and the difference between industry and farming in the South and industry and farming in the North. They felt that slavery was the cause of all this and it needed to be put to an end.
So I suppose their families learned about it with letters from the soldiers that went off to war.
Many, many of those letters are in the collections of the Minnesota Historical Society, thousands of those letters, scores of diaries, and I really encourage people to go and check those out, look at them in the reading rooms of the Minnesota Historical Society Library, actually to hold those letters in your hand and read the day-to-day messages that were sent back home. Everyone wrote letters.
So, Stephen, was Fort Snelling then a military post from about the 1820s through World War II, roughly?
Through World War II, with the one exception of those 3 years, 1858 to 1861. I think it was about 146 years in total. The fort closed officially in October of 1946, but it still had a military function after that for federal agencies, reserve guard units, and so forth, and still has that function today to a small degree.
So most of us know it's out by the airport. It's overlooking the cliff, the two rivers. It must have been rebuilt and remodeled several times.
Remodeled many times. There were huge federal appropriations in the 1880s and 90s, again in the 1930s and 40s. Everything was changed out there. A lot of the buildings of that original campus from the 1880s, 90s are still there, the impressive buildings along Taylor Avenue. Most have been empty for 20 years now. They are administered by the Department of Natural Resources. They're working right now to try to find good adaptive use for some of those buildings. An organization called the Friends of Fort Snelling is advocating for preservation of those buildings, and we can certainly provide a link for people interested in joining that organization. It's an active citizens group supporting preservation of the old post.
And we'll put some links up at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Stephen, I know that I've been out there. It's a museum, and I understand the chapel at Fort Snelling still holds services every Sunday.
Exactly. That was the first pan-sectarian chapel on a military post built by public subscription. It was basically money that was raised in the community to build that post, or to build that chapel. And it was actually built with stones salvaged from the first bridge across the across the Mississippi River at Fort Snelling into St. Paul.
So they used whatever they could find.
Well, it was a good source of nice quarried stone.
I suppose we're speaking with Stephen Osmond, retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society on Minnesota Military Radio. Stephen, is Fort Snelling open to the public? And I understand there's a Civil War weekend coming up.
It is open to the public, and once a year during the summer, they change the time period of the costumed characters at the fort from the 1820s, the frontier era, into the 1860s, the Civil War era. And that event is scheduled this year on the 18th and 19th of August. Everything in the fort at that time will be about the Civil War and about the Dakota conflict of 1862. I know the fort is planning some interactive learning stations with costume characters that can deal with different aspects of life at Fort Snelling in the 1860s. Plus, there's going to be demonstrations on a regular basis. They're going to raise the colors in the morning. They'll have a Civil War flag that goes up next to the round tower. They'll fire a Civil War cannon three times during the day at 11, 2, and 4. They'll have infantry drill. They'll fire muskets at 1, or at, rather at 12 and at 3 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, I know they're going to do an 1860s baseball game, and I think they allow the public to get involved in that as well. So middle of the afternoon, a fashion show from the 1860s.
So that's August 18th and 19th. It'll be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. A pretty interesting way to spend a Saturday or Sunday.
It should be a great place to visit.
Stephen, we got about a minute left, but there's also a great military museum up at Camp Ripley, and the Civil War exhibit up there is extraordinary, isn't it?
Absolutely. A year ago, we opened that exhibit to the public. It's the largest dedicated exhibit in the state on Minnesota's role during the Civil War and the Dakota conflict, Minnesota's two Civil Wars. Probably a dozen mannequins with authentic costuming and uniforms, scores of original weapons, uniform items, battlefield artifacts, personal items, letters, diaries, photographs, all on exhibit for about the next 2 years. And it's open pretty much daily during the summer months, and then it's down to a couple of days a week during the fall and winter months.
So when you're on your way up north to your cabin, schedule a little extra time and stop at Camp Ripley.
Well, we're stopping.
Stephen, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts about historic Fort Snelling during the Civil War?
Well, it really was the center place, the fulcrum of Minnesota's role in the war. All of the soldiers passed through there, coming and going. It had a variety of functions, and you can learn more about them on the 18th and 19th of August out at the historic fort.
Should be a fun weekend. Stephen, thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Now, Stephen Osmond, a retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society, joining us again on the show. Before we go, we've got a couple of mentions. We have one upcoming event that we'd like to go over. There will be a job, career, and resource fair Tuesday, August 7th, starting at 10 a.m. at the Harvest Preparatory School in Minneapolis. We have more details posted on our Facebook. And one other event. Counselor Realty is hosting a charity golf event to benefit the Minnesota National Guard Youth Camp on Wednesday, August 15th at Majestic Oaks Golf Course in Ham Lake. 100%, every penny of the tournament proceeds goes to the youth camp. There's still time to sign up as a tournament sponsor or to get your foursome on the course for a great cause. For more information, visit our Facebook page. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Stephen Whitehead from DAV, Stephen Osmond, Commissioner Larry Shelladeau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we meet Minnesota's senior warrant officer and see how you can memorialize the services at Minnesota's Veterans Cemeteries. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.